Hi, and welcome to the Assist Learning Podcast. My name is Jennifer Kronk. I am an educational technology specialist who loves to explore and discuss the intersection of instructional technology and special education. Let's get started. Everybody, welcome back to Assist Learning. I am your host, Jennifer Kronk, and this is the second part of our two-part series with author Trevor McKenzie. Trevor is the author of the book Dive into Inquiry, and he is also working on a second book, which I'm very much excited about and looking forward to. So in last episode, Trevor was outlining the process of inquiry and the impact it had on him and his students, and more specifically, his students that have learning disabilities, which is the focus of this podcast. In this episode, we are going to continue our conversation regarding some of these students and some practical approaches some teachers can take to move towards a process of inquiry in their classrooms. I hope you find this useful, and let's get started. One of the questions that I have is, while you're demonstrating this process for your students and you're modeling this, have you made any discoveries that you're about yourself that you shared with your students as you're going through this process?
Yeah, you know, absolutely. You know, I'll just use the book as a metaphor, a bit as an analogy. And I'm writing a second book right now. So as I'm talking my students through my thinking and my challenges and what works for me, I'm beginning to become more of a confident writer, and I'm able to achieve different, I guess you can say, successes or benchmarks than I had anticipated before I put voice to those understandings and those wonderings. And you know, writing a book is a huge undertaking. And there are so many different skills and tricks and structures that I've adopted that when I speak to my students about them, not only do they get to see me in the same pool as them with the same, you know, struggles and endeavors that we're all kind of chewing on, but it really does strengthen my own understanding of what my strengths are and what my weaknesses are and what I could do to make myself a more holistically, you know, successful learner. And in my case, that's in my research and in my craft, in my teaching, and then in my writing. So definitely putting words to my own processes has been eye-opening for me and allowed me to get to some of those successful benchmarks that I think I've experienced in my writing.
Now, another question I have for you, and I love your transparency with your students and them getting to see you work all this stuff out. Now, you said earlier that you have your students help you develop the syllabus, and I remember reading this in the book. Have you ever been surprised about the course or the syllabus that's been developed alongside of the students? Have you been like, when you look at this, go, oh, wow, I didn't see it going this way?
Yeah, you know, I'm always surprised. You know, truly, we all have learners that we've worked with, and they'll come to class and they'll sit in a desk or at a table and they'll begin working or collaborating. And there comes a time in our year together where something happens or something occurs and we all of a sudden see them in a different light, or we get to know them a bit better. And we hear a story about them or a passion they have that changes our trajectory together. And allowing our students to have more of a thumbprint or fingerprint over the course syllabus allows me to see those things much earlier in the year. So then we can shape our course together in ways that I have no idea would have happened otherwise. So, you know, an example would be, I had a student in the first week of school say, you know, I'm an aspiring writer. I'd love to be a novelist one day. I'd like to write a novella throughout the year. Can you give me the freedom and support to write this novella? And to be honest, it kind of scared me. It really challenged my concepts of how I'm going to support a student who's taking on such a huge challenge and undertaking. But you know, she was not only successful, you know, in her undertaking, it really taught me a lot about how I can best support my students in these big, big endeavors that they take on. You know, I've had students who have welded sheet metal dragons. You know, this one guy did a sheet metal dragon one year, and it represented symbolism across a couple of units of study that we had done together. I never thought that I would have a student bring in a welding torch to demonstrate understanding in English. And I think that's the beautiful thing is when you truly open the classroom up to student passions and interests and wonderings, you know, we have structures that support that, but the journey is going to look very different from student to student. And that's a pretty beautiful thing.
So tell me about what this looks like. This is past your structured, your controlled part, and even past your guided. When if an administrator was to walk in your room during a class period of time, what does that physically look like with students in action?
Yeah, you know, Jennifer, it looks like many things on many different days. You know, for example, at the beginning of the unit, my students all prepare a plan and pitch. And essentially, they spend about 5 or 10 minutes individually with me where they pitch their unit of study. And they tell me, you know, what their essential question is and why it's meaningful to them, what they're going to research and how they're going to deepen their understanding, you know, what kind of performance task they want to use to demonstrate their new understanding, you know, what their plan is, what their calendar of achievement will be so they can be successful in inquiry. And so, you know, towards the start of the unit, all of these students are working on that side of inquiry. And then once they're in the research phase, it looks like many things. You know, for some students, it looks like interviewing an expert or interviewing someone in our community or accessing a living library, as we like to call it, going and finding someone to deepen understanding. Maybe it's going down to our physical library space and grabbing some hard copies, some hard resources, and digging into some books. Maybe it's getting online and taking out an iPad or a Chromebook or their personal device and doing some online research. And that's where the gradual release of control over learning throughout the whole year really strengthens things towards the end of the year, as students are able to identify not just what they need, but where they can go to locate that need. You know, I definitely do some direct teaching in free inquiry. You know, I suggest for my students to all do an interview of an expert, you know, to access a living library document, a person. And so the direct teaching I do in that section is, you know, I teach them what a strong interview looks like and what are some methods that they could utilize to really make sure that they get the information that they're seeking from their interview. So, and then they go out and they personalize that content and that understanding in their own way. So are they interviewing a photographer or an author or a doctor or another professional? Are they interviewing a family member? So they take that understanding of interviewing and they apply it to their personalized essential question. So, you know, in that plan and pitch piece of paper, that document, whether it's a Google Doc or whether I have it in a binder on my desk, when the principal walks in and she wants to know where Jimmy is and what Jimmy's doing, I can pull out that document and it's really transparent for us all to understand where we're going and why we're headed in that way and how we're all operating. So it's a beautiful thing to see, but it looks different depending on when someone were to come in and have a look in on the classroom.
So you mentioned in the earlier part of the podcast that you really kind of front load your learning objectives. And I'm assuming that your students are also very aware of the learning objectives and they are part and parcel in trying to interweave that in their guided and free inquiry time.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So I do have a friend who actually, she does a lot of 20 time in her science class, which is very different. It's Heidi Bernascotti out of Clarkstown Central High School South. And she actually has in one of her classes, before she begins a unit, last time I was observing her, one of the things that she would do is she would show her students how you validate a tweet, how you validate this, how you validate that. And then she puts learning objectives on a Google document and she has kids start populating the syllabus. And that is the syllabus that they wind up using for that particular unit. And I'm just trying to see if there's much crossover.
Yeah, well, first of all, shout out to Heidi for doing 20% time. And for any teachers listening who, you know, dabble in 20 time or genius hour, you know, that is you know, student agency that is empowering our students. And that is, you know, a step towards what I propose in the book. You know, I definitely propose more of a holistic transformation into personalized learning. But, you know, huge shout out to those teachers who are doing that in their practice. You know, what you described there, definitely there are some synergies with regards to what I do. You know, basically from structured, controlled, and even in the guided, I can honestly say that we really do bang out as many learning objectives as possible. So by the end of the year, you know, the students are really able to focus on the ones that they really want to focus on or really reflect their strengths and their interests and their curiosities. And so if a student wants to focus on graphic art as opposed to an essay, they can. If a student wants to focus more on the physical experimentation in science as opposed to the written document, they can. So, you know, I've you know, the structured and controlled and guided really does hit many, many learning objectives. So that freezes up come-free inquiry. Does that make sense, Jennifer?
Yes, it totally makes sense. And that's why I wanted to get a little clarity for some of our other readers. So what about our students now? A lot of students with disabilities that I've come across with, and actually a disability is actually the interaction between the student and the action they're trying to take. A lot of people think it's like I have a disability, but the disability is actually within the action, which is something that I've learned now going back to school. But when you have students that have these struggles, sometimes they have a really hard time focusing in on an idea. And I know you address this in your book too, which I was so happy to see. So I was definitely one of those students where I know that you've prepared these students through the very beginning of the course that the moment they get to free inquiry, they must be like, you must have at least one or two students that are like, I don't know what to do.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. And you know, through the scaffolded approach to this inquiry classroom, that gradual release of control from the student or from the teacher to the student, you know, I would say that 99% of the students who embark in this journey in my classroom, they're ready to rock. And that's not to say there aren't going to be challenges and uncertainties and even, you know, anxieties that rear. But, you know, I'm able to support them through those pieces. Occasionally, I'll have a student who is stuck or who can't develop their essential question or who is so uncertain about something, you know, with regards to a passion or an interest or a curiosity that they require my support. And again, you know, I said this earlier in the podcast, that's something that truly is a powerful change in inquiry that inquiry affords, is that you can really differentiate and sit next to a student and do something different with them than what all the other students are doing. And my hope, and this is what I've experienced over my years as an inquiry teacher, is that by the time we get to free inquiry, students not only have particular skills and understandings to be successful in inquiry, but they understand themselves better, and not just their own passions and interests and curiosities, but the challenges that they face and then the tools that they could use to hold themselves up and be successful facing those challenges. So, you know, whether it's inspiring students with finding a passion or a curiosity, so that's their topic essentially, or if it's helping them draft an essential question or helping them plan their calendar and then stick to their calendar through reflection and revision throughout the whole inquiry unit, I feel wholeheartedly that I'm better able to meet the diverse needs of every single student in the inquiry classroom than I ever have been in my career. So that's really, you know, that's a big picture idea that I think some teachers aren't going to clearly see until they actively get into inquiry with their students. And I think that's where the swimming pool analogy and the gradual release of control will give everyone a safe entry point to trying it so that you can start to see these benefits that at first may seem a little bit glossy or unrealistic.
I just want to keep asking you all these great questions, you know, and you know what I'd love to hear about? I would love to hear about your own personal foibles, like a couple of good stories where, you know, because we all, whenever we try something new, one of the biggest things that teachers suffer from is fear of failure, and we have to got to embrace that. And that's a point for me that's a real like sore spot that we're trying to, as at least in American society right now in our educational system, there is this whole movement towards the whole iterative process with students and student agency. Yet teachers don't have a lot, or teachers are not afforded a lot of that same agency and encouraged to fail forward and fail fast. And I'm sure while you're doing this that you have had a couple times you're like, all right, not going to do that again.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think you hit it on the head. You know, first I'd like to comment on my message to any listeners who are in leadership positions, whether you're a superintendent or a principal or a department head. You know, as much as we're talking about agency for our students, we really do need to provide agency for everyone that has a stake in learning in our institution. So agency for our teachers, agencies for our support staff, agency for our principals from district leadership. So agency top to bottom to really get not just buy-in and engagement, because it's much more than that. We really are talking about empowering everybody in the process of learning. So You know, I've got many foibles, many things that I haven't done, you know, well, or haven't done successfully. And so I'll share two. And one comes from, you know, the year immediately after my experience with Garrison. And you know, I came back to the classroom with these grand plans to implement inquiry in a really powerful, meaningful, successful way. And some of my students really struggled in it because I hadn't properly helped them transition into this classroom. And you know, essentially I threw them into the deep end of the swimming pool too fast and too soon and too underprepared. And so, although I knew that it was going to be powerful, I didn't properly scaffold them and walk them through this gradual release of control over learning that I think I've got nailed down now in my career. And so that was a point where I realized, wow, if I'm going to really ask my students to take risks, I need to better prepare them for those risks I'm asking them to face. And even as recently as last June, with all of my classes, we planned a big showcase event at our school to share our learning with a broader audience. And we were restricted to the bell schedule. You know, our classes are about an hour and 10 minutes long. And when it came time to invite classes to our event, it was well attended, but all of my classes needed more time with their audience. They were so rushed and sharing and so caught off guard that the passion that they had demonstrated throughout their learning throughout the whole year, it was kind of a letdown at the end of the year to be disappointed by our bell schedule, right? And so this year, you know, we're already planning our showcase event. It's only September and we're looking forward to June. And we're already talking about how we could eliminate some of those scheduling challenges we faced last year. And so, you know, I think you hit it on the head. You know, we have to fall forward or fail forward. We have to lean into life and take some risks and realize that it all benefits greater growth and success. And that's a big piece of what I try to model for my students, is to put words to those values and words to those beliefs. So as an educator, as the teacher in the room, they see me as again, being more than just talk. You know, we're going to operate under this process of failing forward and leaning into life.
I think that's great to hear. And I could definitely see how that kind of process, like, you know, that showcase is so important for them. But it is when you're restricted to the school schedule, that can be a real big issue. And thank you for sharing that. And I'm sure that you're probably going to wind up having a killer showcase this coming school year. And also, I must say a huge shout out to your Canadian hour and 10 minute period schedule, much better than the 45 minutes that's typical around here.
Ouch. That's tough. How could deep learning occur in 45 minutes? That's a struggle.
Yeah, it's a struggle, but I see many teachers rocking it on a regular basis. But it'd be wonderful to have that much time with kids. Yeah. So now, how is this for you trying to get administrative buy-in? So when we're just talking about teacher agency, we have our expectations to meet. And I don't know if I can bet money, like I lay $20 down on the table right now, although you can't see me, that when you started doing this inquiry process, that you must have had some naysayers on staff. And it also must have been a little difficult to try and get administrative support for you completely turn your approach on ear with something new. Like, what was that like? Now, we talked about the classroom, but what about you professionally?
Yeah, you know, Jennifer, and I mean this wholeheartedly, you know, early in my career, I had courageous leadership, you know, and I did have leadership who was really supportive in doing things differently and taking on big questions and asking big questions of my practice and then supporting me and asking those questions. And that courageous leadership really did allow me to make big strides, not just for myself, but for my class, for my school. You know, my colleagues saw what was going on, and I've never been a preacher. I've never, you know, the book, although it's an artifact of what I propose, I've never tried to walk into someone's class and tell them they're doing it wrong. I really am of the belief that, you know, if I'm doing good things, other people will see them and want to try them on for size. So, you know, early on in my career, I have always had courageous leadership. But, you know, as I visit schools and districts and organizations around the world, you know, I parachute in and I get to see where examples of not so courageous leadership. And I get to work with teams of teachers who are not being as supported in terms of thinking outside the box and asking big questions of themselves. And so part of my advice is to, for those teachers who feel like they may be restricted, is to find your sandbox and who you want to invite into your sandbox. And by sandbox, I mean, you know, what is your big question that you're asking of yourself? And if it's inquiry, great. If it's another big question, so be it. But then invite colleagues that you want to play with that playful experimentation and pedagogy. and reflect with, and then present that reflection to your administration so they could see where your growth was and what you have to offer for the culture of learning at your school. So, you know, we have to find like-minded people who are chewing on similar passions and interests in our practice. And you know, I've worked with districts where I come in and work with district leadership, where I try to change the culture of principals in a district. And it's the same thing, you know, trying to be courageous in what we can do to inspire change and how we could support change more wholeheartedly across the district. So it's a big question, but I don't think that's a barrier that we need to necessarily worry about in terms of admin buy-in. I think we need to find that sandbox and invite people to play with us in that sandbox.
So I agree. And I think that if you're transparent in your process and you invite your administrators in, I am very fortunate. I get to work in multiple districts. And I have to say that every single one of my districts has courageous leadership in different forms and manifests with different wonderful ideas. And I would venture to say that every single one of the leaders that I know personally, if they were to walk into a classroom like this and see students doing all something different, they would be like, wow, what are you guys doing? You know, tell me about it. Let me hear your story.
Yeah.
I think that as we move towards a culture that's more inquiry based, probably the tougher questions are going to be answered to the community.
And just
bringing it to the community in such a way where we're able to show some of these meaningful things. I mean, one of the things that I love, and it smacks of some aspects of inquiry, but it's not completely your inquiry process, but some of the stuff that I've been able to see is like getting students to do a pitch and start Kickstarters and get their own personal businesses going and get their own personal branding going, because it's that salience of objectives and real life importance like you were talking about with Garrison.
Absolutely. And, you know, I've never had naysayers. I've never had people challenge what's happening in my classroom. I've just had colleagues or people wanting clarity of what it looks like. And I think the book is an artifact of that clarity. You know, definitely, I think in my district here, I've built a bit of a reputation. So I think, you know, that the clarity is there because of the things that I've done over the years. But I think for those teachers who are, you know, at all concerned about the perception from the outside looking in or whether or not they have admin support, it's just, you know, be prepared to have those conversations and provide those resources where you can present clarity in terms of what you're doing. And that free inquiry isn't free time. You know, the more kind of freedom we give our students and agency over learning we give them, I think the more tools we need to make sure that they have in their tool belt and the more structures we have to have in place to help them be successful. And I think if you're clear about what those tools and structures are, then I think, you know, everyone's going to appreciate what it is that you're doing in your classroom.
These are really good conversations. I'm having so much fun.
I am too.
Thank you so much. So Trevor, you mentioned that you're working on a second book. Do you want to do a plug for that and tell our listeners a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. You know, I never set out to write a book, just as I didn't set out to write a second book for that matter. And the more I travel, the more I support schools and teachers and districts, the more I've seen, you know, questions around what inquiry looks like with our youngest learners, kind of kindergarten to grade five. So this is really going to be the focus of the second book is, you know, what I propose and dive in inquiry, but what it looks like K to five and what the activities and resources and understandings that our youngest students need to know and what our teachers need to know to most powerfully adopt inquiry. Yeah. So I'm excited for that. It should be out in print early 2018.
Oh, that's so exciting. I can't wait to read your next book. The first book was fantastic, so I can only imagine the next book is going to be great. So thank you so much for your time, Trevor. I can't believe that I was able to get you on the podcast and have you talk about all your wonderful work and how this is so meaningful, especially for students that have learning disabilities, because it increases their agency and they can choose how they consume the information, how they present their information. It's just a win-win all the way around. What would be the best way for somebody to contact you, or if they had any questions, what would they do?
Thank you. Yeah. You know, you can find me on Twitter @Trev_McKenzie. And the hashtag Dive in Inquiry is a nice community of like-minded educators thinking about inquiry. You can find me on my website, trevormckenzie.com. There's a contact page there and you could submit and I'll get back to you right away. And I'm really up to doing a Google Hangout with teams of teachers chewing on inquiry or doing a book club or or doing something to better support the students that we're working with. So those are a couple of my online spaces. You know, I had a brilliant mentor once say to me, you know, I don't produce a resume anymore. I just tell people to Google me and they'll find me. And really, if you Google me, you'll find me as well. And those are a couple of those spaces where you can locate me.
All right. Thank you so much, Trevor. It was a wonderful having you. And maybe I can get you on the podcast again when your second book comes out.
I love it, Jennifer. Thanks for having me so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much for joining me for this episode of Assist Learning. And a special thanks to my producer, Chris Nessie of the House of EdTech. Thanks so much and see you next week. Assist Learning is a proud member of the Education Podcast Network, a podcast network by teachers for teachers. This podcast is also for families. For more great podcasts, visit edupodcastnetwork.com.